Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live Chat Room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. You're listening to Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hey, good to have your company. Hour number two of the program. Thank you so much for your comments. We've had some emails. We've had some calls just in the first hour. We've had plenty of commentary, both supportive and not supportive, on the chat box, which I love. I always get bored when people say, "You're right, Chris." That's terrific. It's good to get that occasionally, but it's boring, isn't it? Come and pick me to bits and you tell me whether you've got a fair and decent argument. And if you want to challenge me over what I had to say about some of those issues in the first hour, jump on right now on the open line. I'm here. I'm here for the taking. But you better be in for a fight. You can phone in from the US or Canada on 1-888-201-6425. Or the UK on 0330024-1026, or Australia and New Zealand on 1-800-670-310. Britain is set to declare China a threat to national security after two malicious cyber campaigns targeting Westminster parliamentarians and Britain's 40 million voters. We know in Australia how prolific this has been as well, and for some reason, they don't seem at all interested in trying to stop it happening. You know, it's not the kind of thing that you hear Anthony Albanese raise when he gets together with Xi Jinping. But getting back with Britain, Australia's Five Eyes spy network supported Britain in identifying China state-affiliated actors as responsible for two malicious cyber campaigns targeting Westminster parliamentarians and Britain's 40 million voters. Britain has raised the issue of China's targeting of British democratic institutions and political processes with the Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi and has made public his concerns about China. So, quote, "Other countries should see the detail of threats that our systems and democracies face." Oliver Dowden, Britain's Deputy Prime Minister, also indicated the UK would officially declare China a threat. This has come from The Times. In an unprecedented joint operation to expose Chinese espionage, London and Washington revealed details of a decade-long campaign by Beijing to repress critics, compromise government institutions, and steal trade secrets, according to The Times. In the UK, ministers revealed that China had successfully gained access to a treasure trove of personal information in a cyber attack on Britain's election watchdog and had attempted to spy on MPs critical of Beijing. You can talk about the fact that we are a little oversensitive about what China is up to militarily as long as you want, and I agree with much of what you say. But when it comes to spying and cyber hacking and cyber criminals, the Chinese are ultra professionals. They've been doing it for decades and they've been doing it to wreck and destroy. That's the way they play their war. Let's not underestimate what's going on here. Meanwhile, the coalition back in Australia has left open the possibility of rejecting Labor's emergency migration removal powers, as it demands a one-night Senate inquiry into the legislation to ensure there are no unintended consequences. What could go wrong? Come on. Opposition immigration spokesman Dan Tehan said the process followed by Immigration Minister Andrew Giles had been a sham, he's right there, and complete and utter mess, revealing the legislation he was briefed on this morning had Friday's date on it. Can you believe that? You can't even put the proper day of the week on your proposed legislation. Andrew Giles is a dill. Did the minister come to us and say, "Okay, we want to give you this legislation so that you can look at it over the weekend so that you can make sure there's no unintended consequences?" No, he did not, Mr. Tehan told the House. He sat on it over the weekend. He sat on it yesterday and then presented it to us today. That is incompetence, because if it's not considered properly, if we can't look at the detail, if we can't make sure that there are no unintended consequences, then this legislation might not do the job. Dan Tehan is 100% right. I miss Dan Tehan running various portfolios in the government because he was able to do it quite effectively and efficiently. And right now, the likes of Andrew Giles, it's kindergarten stuff, seriously. They've even got the wrong day of the week on the policy. Give me a break. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I come to you for facts. I really appreciate what you and your team do.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Let's get to Victoria right now, where the federal independent MP in the House of Reps holds the seat of Monash, and his name is Russell Broadbent. Russell, welcome to TNT. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Chris. Great to be here. But look, let me say, it's not Andrew Giles the problem here. It's the government is the problem here. That he doesn't sign off on all that stuff. The whole cabinet signs off on that.
They'd
stuff.
Have to, wouldn't they?
That's right. That's right. And the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet should be going through that stuff with a fine tooth comb.
And they didn't pick up the fact that it's not Friday.
Why shouldn't there be an inquiry for one night?
Yeah. To make sure that the legislation is right, because they got it wrong last time, didn't they?
That's right. That's right. So these things, details and timing are very, very important, because we are dealing with people's lives here. Those that are detainees and managing them, and those who are let out into the community that have a record. Now, if they've done their time and they can't go back to their country, yes, we have a dilemma. Yes, we have a dilemma. They will not be accepted by the country. But do we look for other countries to take these people? What do we do? I mean, the previous government, the Morrison government, had a very good track record, at least on trying everything they possibly could to get these people out of the country.
They did that. They did that. I want to talk about vaccine mandates, because you've had something to say in the last 24 hours. New South Wales vaccine mandates are set to be dropped next month, according to what the minister told radio yesterday. It's about 18 months, 2 years overdue. But with high rates of excess deaths, heart attacks and turbo cancer, some doctors are pleading for the jabs to be banned altogether. This is what you had to say on the subject in the chamber yesterday.
Thank you, Deputy Speaker. I read today that finally, New South Wales Health looks set to scrap its useless, redundant and discriminatory COVID mandates. But we're still waiting in Victoria to drop its three jab or no work policy. I still receive heartbreaking calls from doctors, nurses, fire rescue, police officers and paramedics who were terminated from their jobs, many of them charged with serious misconduct put on their record for not submitting to the experimental COVID jab. Mind you, even in the midst of their distress and suffering at the injustice perpetrated against them, not one of them regrets not taking the experimental GMO injections. And why would they, with unprecedented rates of excess deaths around the world, including Australia, heart attacks, strokes, turbo cancer, autoimmune disease? Thousands of esteemed doctors and academics across the world continue to plead for the mRNA jabs to be banned.
The ridiculous point about all of this is, Russell Broadbent, you are almost a lone voice in the parliament.
No, I'd say a lone voice. I have had support at different times to second motions so we can discuss the matter. But amazingly, there were divisions in the parliament, so they made sure that I ran out of time to be able to present. So the parliament don't want to hear about this. I know I've said to people, look, contact your local member, and some of them are ministers. They will not even discuss the matter with them. They won't even discuss the matter. So people from all over Australia, where are they coming? They're coming to someone who will listen. And I had a very distressed call the day before yesterday from Verity, who I'll be speaking about in the parliament at some stage. They knocked us off today, so we couldn't do it today. But I'm saying to you, Chris, she said, I just so feel someone will listen to what I have to say. Isn't that terrible? Yeah. Just someone will listen to what I have to say. She said, I've been doing this on my own for 2 years. I've been alone. I've been isolated. And people don't believe me. And two doctors, she's taken the vaccines, right? Taken one vaccine, I think it was, one vaccine, and she became ill straight away.
Right.
So her employer, she's a nurse, and they said, unless you take two, you're losing your job. So she's already sick. So she's taken the vaccine. She goes to the doctor, and the doctor says, you're an anti-vaxxer. How can you be an anti-vaxxer if you've taken the vaccines?
Yeah, hospitals are supposed to make people well, not encourage them to stay sick.
That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, it's very tough when you take those phone calls. Chris, I know you've taken many in your time in radio and in television, and you've spoken to people off air. I know, and it's been very difficult for you many times because you take that home with you.
Mm.
You take that memory home with you. And, you know, we are now open to any doctor, come and talk to us. Any specialist, come and talk to us.
Good.
Anybody that knows something that they know I should know, or anybody that's vaccine injured, come and talk to us.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You talk about Victoria not budging, right, because that you've got to live in a state of fear in Victoria.
Yeah.
But that third jab, if you took that third jab in 2022, I had a conversation with a world-renowned professor about this, and he said the effects that you still have from whatever advantage you took from a third jab in 2022 are well and truly exceeded by now. So not only are they trying to make you live in fear and enforce a jab on you that has proven to be observed to be worse than what they expected, but they also don't work this far on. They don't make any difference to the way you live, where they shouldn't have to take their jab.
That's correct. Now, I don't know who you've spoken to, but there are many specialists around the world that are equally clear about what should happen with these vaccines. Now, look, you and I are not doctors. We don't know whether it is the vaccines or not. We don't know.
Mm.
We don't know what the excess deaths are caused by.
No.
We might think something, but we're not doctors. So why not have the full inquiry?
Yep.
The Royal Commission that the Prime Minister of today said he was going to have and then walked away from it after the election campaign.
Yeah. Listen to this. Listen to this. I've got this from Barbara, one of our viewers, who's just posted something on our chat box on tntradio.live. Barbara writes, Chris, Barb here. I'm angry, so angry. My brother died, 81 years of age, very fit. Had helped my son lay 4 cubic metres of concrete 2 days before he collapsed and died of a brain aneurysm on Father's Day last year after his 5th jab. 2 months later, my cousin, aged 74, died of the same brain aneurysm. I'm sorry, I pressed the wrong button. 5th jab. That's from Barbara.
But the doctors would argue that they just had an aneurysm.
Yeah. Yeah, try and
now
prove
my
it.
Question there would be, is it normal for people of that age to have an aneurysm?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know, but I think that aneurysms are normally in younger people. I don't know. But brain cancer is not normal. I spoke to a doctor. He said, I've never seen brain cancer in an older person in all of my 50 years of being a GP.
Right. And so you've got
that's the thing, Chris. These can't be pinned down. They'll say, well, that certainly wasn't the vaccine.
Yeah. Yeah. The New Zealand study recently, Russell, has provided the government with all the proof it needs to banish these vaccines to the sharps bin of history, surely.
You would expect so. But, Chris, I know that other agencies monitor your program. They are dying for you and I to make a mistake, But we're not going to because, number one, we don't claim any knowledge outside of what anybody else is hearing. We don't tell somebody they should take a certain protocol to get better. We can direct them to people who are working in that area, but we don't tell them where to go. We don't tell them not to have a jab or to have a jab. That's up to the people.
Yeah.
You know, let the buyer beware. That's what we grew up on, commercials, principles and practice. Let the buyer beware in all things. We are responsible for ourselves. But governments should do as much as they possibly can to protect their citizens as well. And if there's a doubt, why not double your efforts to find out why there's excess deaths in Australia? We're talking 20,000 people.
Yeah. Unless, of course, you're afraid of the result.
Correct.
Russell Broadbent, stay right there. I've got to take a quick break and we'll come back in about 2 minutes' time. The member for Monash on with us today. This is TNT.
TNT's Jason Allbourne.
What that sneaky World Health Organization, that private organization linked to the United Nations, is planning to do to take away yours and my medical sovereignty. Or pretending that they're not going to, of course, because it just so happens that they have got the ability to look into a crystal ball, see around corners, and tell us that there is yet another virus or disease or sickness coming for us, and the only way that we survive it is to do exactly what Tedros tells us to do, even though the man's not even a doctor. Can't even tell his own Ethiopian country on three separate occasions, goodness me, that they have had a cholera outbreak. Cholera characterized by acute watery diarrhea that, if not diagnosed correctly, can result in death. Well, on three occasions, Tedros's answer was, we didn't have good enough testing or testing available, so we didn't really know that it was cholera. That's the guy who's leading the world.
Weekends with Jason Allbourne on today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
CO2 sustains all life on Earth, but now it's in long-term decline. We face the return of an ice age. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I've got Russell Broadbent with me. I want to talk about the cashless society. The big banks seem to be charging towards the inevitable. Well, they see it as inevitable, but maybe they should start reading some of the surveys that are now coming out, Russell, including this one from payments technology company Wave. 7 in 10 Australians say they're concerned about a cashless society, while 2 in 5 Australians are extremely concerned about notes and coins becoming relics. That's according to Wave, which found 63% of Aussies are concerned the move would exacerbate economic inequality. It found 58% hold concerns because they're worried they will pay more in banking and card fees. You bet you will. And 42% have little trust in financial services to operate ethically in a cashless society. No trust. But they're heading full steam ahead on this, aren't they?
Well, the Parliament House is a perfect example. You cannot use cash in the Parliament House.
Oh.
Yeah, that started during COVID. It's a big cost saver for them. But remember, every time I bump on that to go to the staff cafeteria to buy my lunch, it costs me a percentage, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas if I paid in cash, it cost me nothing. Mm. Every time we tap, we're putting money in the big bank's hands.
Follow the money trail.
Follow the money trail. It's big money. So what I'm saying, I'm sorry about these division bells in the background, Chris. That's where
we are.
Are
you going to run?
I do, but I'm not going to. I'm going to stick with you.
Oh, good on you.
I'm an independent, remember?
That's so right.
I'm not running to the whip's call. So I'm staying here with Chris Smith. I'm sticking with you, mister.
Outstanding.
So, you know, but in regional areas, now I represent a regional area, as you know, a lot of these banking facilities are closing. Mm. So, you know, cash becomes really important to you because you actually need cash to do transactions. And in that horrible storm in Merbur North, what happened was, what did they lose first? Their communications, lose your communications, lose your phone, lose your internet, right? So you couldn't buy fuel. Couldn't buy anything else. You needed cash.
Yeah.
If you had cash, you can go anywhere and still keep
trading.
The same in
conflict and war.
Absolutely.
The first thing they'll do is turn off the electricity and turn off our internet.
Yeah. And if you turn off power in country areas or any area, I thought, well, I've got a hard phone. I'm right. I can still ring Chris Smith. No, you can't, because that is routed through a digital exchange.
Yeah.
Of course it is. So if you lose power, as they lost power in Merbur North, they lost communications. One fella said, it took me 2 days to cut my way out of my property, cut his way out through the path, through the trees. He couldn't ring anybody to tell him he's stuck inside his property.
Terrible.
That's why cash becomes really important. I'm not mixing these things up, but cash has always been important and should be, and nobody should monitor it. My wife went to the bank and I'd said to her, get this money out, please. And they said to her, what do you want it for? And she said,
it's not your money.
Russell didn't tell me.
Yeah.
Simple as that. Russell didn't tell me.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, we can't give you that. We'll have to order it. We'll have to order that money in.
What?
Yeah. So, but the point is, you know, you'd remember the time when I paid all my staff in my business in cash.
Yeah, in envelopes.
In envelopes, that's correct. And that's how they were paid in cash. And nowadays it goes into your account. So you've only got access to it via the internet. You haven't got access to it because it's in your hand. It's in your cupboard, it's in your boot or wherever you put it at the time. Or probably in your case, into your back skyrocket.
Yes.
And that's where it stayed till it was exhausted as a young person. But let me say this. I will work constantly as I have. We're going to talk about disability services in a minute. I hope we've got time.
Yes.
But more importantly, we have to be – I said in my maiden speech, and I'm going to call it that because it was then, that I'm here to protect the freedom of families. And there was all sorts of the, you know, what's he on about? Well, what did COVID – what happened with COVID? Where did your freedom go then?
Mm.
Where did your freedom go on consent to have the vaccine? Where did the coercion come in when you worked for a tractor dealer and you're told you had to be vaccinated to go and sell a tractor? Come on.
Mm.
Out on the farm, told farmers who were milking, we won't pick up your milk unless you're vaccinated. What? Unbelievable stuff.
When we think back on it, you know, it's hard to believe that it actually happened, but we went along with it because they were brainwashing us.
Now, Chris, you're going to ask me about the NDIS, and I've got a background in disability services, which I won't go into now, but before I entered the parliament, I was chair of a disability organisation, voluntary,
right,
of course, but it was very hands-on. So I had a lot to do with and learned a lot from that disability service and the clients that we served and their families, of course.
Answer this question. Did we create a system that could be easily rorted?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's got to stop.
Yep. We did the same thing in childcare. It was easily rorted until we changed it. You know, now that I think Bill Shorten is trying to make the changes, but here he's getting pushback now from all the premiers.
Yeah.
When the premiers handed over the NDIS to the federal government, they said, you ripper, they're going to cop all the costs of this. We lose a bit now. But over the years, we're miles ahead and we haven't got the responsibility for anyone with a disability. It's all going to the feds and they'll have to cop any odour from that.
Yeah.
So yippee-doo, says the states. So Shorten's come along and said, now, hang on, we're not paying for all this. We're not paying for things that are partly health-related like autism. We're not paying for that, you know, unless it's severe disability. We want the states to pick that up through your education system and your health system.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, yeah, that's all right. We accept that. Till the premiers found out about it, and they said, hang on. We don't want this expense. We want a special meeting with the Prime Minister. We want a special meeting. And all the six premiers have all lined up together to say, hey, we don't want to pay for this. We don't want to pay for this. Because they've just figured out just what it's going to cost them to do it.
Mm.
And I've seen the whole circle go around. Remember when they said, we are not having special schools like Russell runs at the moment, you know, we are going to have integrated. We're going to integrate all the kids into the mainstream schools.
Mm.
And they did that. And now here we are 40 years later. What are they creating now? Special schools everywhere. Yeah. What do these premiers want? Special schools.
Yeah.
It's just a wheel turn. And
I
prayed that day that I wasn't going to be here around when the wheel turned and we started to create special schools again.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit like education, Russell. You know, they came up with all different ways for children to learn, and then they discovered 25 years later that, oh, that wasn't the way they should have learnt. We should have kept the system as it was and, you know, make sure that they sound the words out rather than remember cards. But it took 25...
They did it in lots of ways. Remember when Joan Kerner was premier? They said, right, you don't have to wear a uniform to school anymore.
That's right.
So all the rich kids were wearing really spanky clothes and all the poor kids stood out like dogs, you know what?
Yeah.
You know, And then they realised what they'd done, and they said, oh, no, we should all go back to a uniform.
You're right. Can I ask you a question about yesterday's news poll? In summary, One Nation is travelling almost twice as good as it did last election. Federal opposition up a bit, nudged up again. Down again, a fall for Labor again. The trajectory seems to be pretty consistent over the last few news polls. What does it tell you?
It tells me there's no change for the majors. It tells me that both leaders are on the nose.
Yeah.
One's minus seven, one minus 11 or 14.
That's right. Yeah.
Minus 11, yeah. Net satisfaction is very important. I don't look at the preferred prime minister at all. That's irrelevant.
Right.
Jeff Kennett was preferred premier and lost the election campaign. So that's relevant. But net satisfaction is important. Yeah. People approve and disapprove of their performance. The majors, not much change, but a big shift generally, the trend, away from the major parties and towards smaller independent,
yes,
independent members, and depending on where those preferences go back. So both parties are on the nose, and if this continues the next election, you will have a minority government of some sort.
Yeah. Well, you look at the last election, you know, 30% approximately for both of the major parties. If they're down on that at the following election, you're right. We could see the emergence of a third party as well.
But the Greens have picked up that. They're owning that whole populist renters, you know, issue.
Yeah.
Saying we're here for renters, we're here for renters. Well, 40% of Australians, you know, rent. So, you know, there's an active young group of people there that have been corralled towards that. But more importantly, Chris, there has been a shift away from the major parties. The major attack on me at the last election campaign was not don't vote Liberal, it was don't vote for the major parties.
Mm.
That was just the message that all the others were putting out. The independents were putting out, don't vote for the major parties.
Mm.
They didn't say who to vote for, just don't vote for the major parties.
Yeah.
So that's getting stronger and stronger and stronger all the time. And having regard to that, it's working. It's working.
Yeah, very, very true. Great to have you on the program. Thank you for getting
great to be here.
A long list of topics today.
And we've got another 20 we can go through.
We probably could.
This government's not travelling that well.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Let's talk about defence sometime.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's put that down, Russell, to talk about, because it may not happen every day, but every week there's a major defence story to bite into. So we'll do that. Good on you. Thank you very much for your
all
time.
Best.
Have a great week.
Thank you.
Good Easter. Well, and you too. Have a great Easter. Thank you very much, mate. Good stuff. Russell Broadbent, the member for Monash in Victoria, Federal MP. Good to have him on the program. Just in reference to Barbara's comments about her family and the aneurysms they suffered after taking jabs, Alina has added to that conversation on the chat box. And Alina writes, I deeply feel for your loss, Barbara. I lost my mother due to the lethal protocol in our hospitals. And because she was 73 and had diabetes, they did not think she was worth living. These murderous acts are still going on now. It was Alfred Hospital in Victoria that took her away from us. And because she did not test for COVID, they told us they will still butt her down as COVID death. How awful to slap that on her, given what people have suffered in Victoria. Got to get some news for you. We'll come back after that. Plenty more on the program. Do not go anywhere. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
The news you need when you need it.
Oh, you have a deep voice.
TNT.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. The White House continues to shrug off claims that Ukraine played a part in Friday's terrorist attack in Moscow, saying the sole responsibility lies with Islamic State. China's warned relations with the Philippines have reached a crossroads following yet another aggressive confrontation in the South China Sea. And US presidential candidate Donald Trump has warned Israel to wrap up its war in Gaza because it's losing the world's support.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one.
TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Good stuff. State care. We don't talk about state care. As a matter of fact, I doubt whether in my many years in media, I've forgotten the number, many years in media that I've actually done too many stories on state care. And it's got a checkered past in Australia. The care bit is not always what it seems. And at times care is the last word that comes to mind when the state interferes in the care of vulnerable people. My next guest issued a media release on the matter, identifying a specific alarming case. Matilda Borden is a forensic social worker, former National Secretary of Whistleblowers Australia. She's a founding member of the Community Linkages, Inclusion and Innovation Centre. Matilda has extensive experience specialising in complex and compounding psychosocial barriers, including child protection, homelessness, poverty, hoarding, squalor, and disabilities. It's a sector that too often is ignored and not provided for. Matilda joins us live from Adelaide in South Australia. Matilda Borden, welcome to TNT.
Thank you for inviting me.
That's okay. Great to have you on here. There's so much to talk about. You've identified a highly educated, multilingual woman, Dr. K.M., who was taken from the care of her loving son and rich community of carers, medical practitioners, nurses, and others, and placed into full guardianship of the state.
Yep.
Tell us the story and the significance of Dr. K.M.'s case.
Well, she managed to get whisked away into guardianship in the space of 3 weeks with absolutely no single shred of evidence of anybody abusing her, neglecting her, maltreating her, denying her care, none of the above. Not a skerrick of information. What you really have is actually a story whereby DKM's son, and I'm trying to avoid naming her because she's known to me.
Yeah, right. Okay, we can't name her. And for those people who want us to name her, we can't because there are implications legally for her and also for her family.
That's right. That's right. However, the woman's son was caring for her. He lived in the house a lot of the time because he also had an art studio in the back of the house. And he had done for like two decades or more because he's a sculptor. And while he was there working on his sculptures, he would often always be caring for his parents, you know, his elderly parents. And, you know, whether it's serving cups of tea or coffee, helping with medications, whatever it was, running errands to the shops, etc. And the daughter in this situation was aggrieved because she was left out of any financial or guardianship affairs involving both mother and father. Mum and dad both decided that they did not want the daughter under any circumstances caring for them or being responsible for their affairs. When she discovers this, bingo, she straight away from Victoria puts in an application here in South Australia to have, well, not just one parent, but effectively both parents guardianshiped. The father isn't yet the subject of guardianship orders, but it's only a matter of time. He's already in a nursing home. We know that much.
Wow.
And the assets are being prepared for sale.
The assets are being prepared for sale now because they've become power of attorney straight away.
Well, no, the daughter in this instance and her husband are not named as guardians, but the state is. The state's the guardian. And already, I'll put it this way, the state has made no effort to prevent the sale of any property or assets, right?
That is criminal.
Of course, isn't it? Now, the thing is, you and I could easily, at any point in time in our life, be guardianshipped by the state the moment we have a diagnosis of anything. You know, you have a urinary tract infection. In women, it's so common. In women, it is so common once they get to a certain age. where it almost becomes frequent, you know, even when you're taking antibiotics, it can become a frequently recurring matter, which can affect cognitive impairment. Of course, you know, you get treatment, you recover. There's no need for guardianship in those sorts of cases, you know. Yeah. And even people with, let's say, dementia. I mean, there's different. Dementia is on a sliding scale, you know. Not everybody who has a diagnosis of dementia instantly has, you know, acts of aggression or totally forgetful and, you know, suffering severe memory loss or not able to make a decision, for example, what they want to wear on a particular day or where they want to go and, you know, whether they want to visit a family friend or, you know, go out for a cup of coffee with someone or what they want to wear on the day or what they want to eat or what medications they want to take, right? I mean, I'm looking after my elderly mother as well, and she nearly got guardianship herself. It's just crackers. I mean, we managed to, you know, pull her out of that situation through an awful lot of intervention, but it's the same scenario. Anybody
but,
can...
But clearly the system has a weak bent to it in that the family can use their own greed to have you sidelined.
Absolutely, with no evidence at all. And this, our South Australian Civil and Administrative Tribunal, SACAT, entertains these applications all the time, routinely, right? And I'm talking about you don't need to prove that somebody has neglected or abused, let's say, a particular so-called protected person. Protected from what? Seriously, you're protected from what? Going into a nursing home and having your assets sold? Is that what you're being protected from? It's obscene. But I can make an application against you from South Australia to wherever you are, and you could be gone almost overnight. All I need is, you know, maybe a couple of nights, 3 weeks, as we can see here in South Australia.
Okay, so obviously these decisions are not being made by the courts. They're being made by tribunals, are they?
Exactly. Exactly. And their attitude, for the most part, and I've heard this said many, many, many times, and including by the victims themselves, is that, quote, the tribunals are, quote, not bound by any rules of evidence. Well, that's actually a complete baloney and sham. If you believe that, then I don't know what to say. It's not that they're not bound by any rules of evidence. They're not bound by the strict rules of evidence, so which means that they can inform themselves.
So are you suggesting that the courtroom is the place for these things
absolutely.
To be fought?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And especially if you want to see some procedural justice. I mean, in this instance, DKM wasn't even involved in the decision-making process. And we, as best as we can ascertain, certainly for many months, if not many weeks, certainly not from the beginning, she was never even informed that these proceedings were happening to her.
No.
And we were told, when I say we, through my colleague, we were informed that nobody is to communicate with her in case it causes her distress. So the subject of her guardianship or any things around the guardianship matters and concerns are not to be discussed in case she gets distressed. Well, wouldn't you be distressed if somebody was selling up your assets from under you, putting you in a nursing home, when your clear wish in the advanced care directive and in a gazillion emails that she sent to her son over 14 years make crystal clear what she wishes for herself and how much she wanted to be with her family and friends and people visiting her home and caring for her. I mean, she hasn't even seen her son's house, and he built the house far over 20 years ago. She hasn't been allowed to see his house.
Wow. This is just awful. You've called for a Kiara's Law to get all family guardianship matters taken out of the jurisdiction of the state civil and administrative tribunal and put before the courts. Explain to us what Kiara's Law is. Just that.
It's a series of changes we want to see happen. But among other things, Kiara was sucked into the SACAT for over 2 years. We had the spectre of having Kiara guardianshipped into the care of the state because basically an NDIA planner leaked confidential reports written by myself and an occupational therapist to the adult safeguarding unit as a vendetta. And the vendetta was started when I started to challenge the NDIA planner about her practice and certainly a plan that she produced for one of the family members in this particular instance concerning a 13-year-old nonverbal autistic boy. And the plan that she produced was just appalling. We couldn't do anything with it. So I went and appealed it to the AAT. and the payback was to start guardianship proceedings. However, when you read the actual originating document for why the guardianship proceedings were going to be commenced against the mother and the daughter, the only name, the only person mentioned in the application or as the grounds for the application was me and my name repeatedly. Matilda Borden this, Matilda Borden that. Well, excuse me, this it doesn't concern who works for the so-called vulnerable or protected person. We have to demonstrate that that person lacks capacity. That was the only thing in question, not my practice and not what I do with that particular client, right? But the NDIA has an awful lot to answer in this process.
Well, let me look at it this way. If you're putting these major decisions on social care in the hands of bureaucrats, we're probably doomed anyway, aren't we? We've got Absolutely. To take it out of their hands.
Totally agree. They need to stay out of people's lives.
Yeah.
For example, you and I, we're sharing a household, you know, we might be brother and sister, let's say, and you and I have a little squabble over making tea, whose turn it is to make tea.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get angry at me because, you know, you don't want lasagna tonight and you want chicken schnitzel. That would be grounds enough for family conflict and then bang, an application being lodged. Okay.
Stop.
No, I'm not exaggerating. Family conflict, and I use the word loosely. What constitutes family conflict? Now, not only that, the SACAT doesn't have the mandate or the authority to replace the family court. You've got issues with somebody, go to the family court or another court. If we're dealing with adults, you know, you can go to the Supreme Court, you can go to a magistrate's court, you can sort out your squabbles somewhere else. It doesn't have to concern the SACAT, and it doesn't have to threaten guardianship over a vulnerable person.
It's such a terrible part. And, of course, most of this is done in closed session, so it rarely gets publicised and, therefore, it rarely gets scrutinised.
And not only that, all too often people who support the vulnerable person, like myself and many, many, many other advocates and community members, we're also left out as well. We're not even allowed in the room when these proceedings are happening. So there's no one to bear witness. It's all East Germany Stasi chamber type of practices, and it's obscene. And now, I mean, I know that Minister Bill Shorten is wanting changes to the NDIA and the states are resisting those changes, but I tell you what, you can guarantee the reason the states don't want the changes is because they're profiteering from it. This sort of stuff makes a ton of money for the states, I can tell you.
Why? How?
Well, because if you can, you know, rustle people into guardianship when they're on the NDIA system, don't you worry. Suddenly, all of a sudden, people's budgets, where hypothetically I'm, let's say, your NDIA provider and you're living on your own, your budget might be, let's say, $300,000, $400,000. But the moment the state puts you into care, that provider, which is probably not going to be me if I've advocated for you, it could be another provider that is approved or known within the system. Could be a hired gun that probably helped get the person into guardianship as well. Because don't you worry, there are spotters out there making sure that that there are bodies being funneled into these systems. But all of a sudden, these service providers can go from a $300,000, $400,000 budget to $1.2 million, $1.3 million.
Right. Okay. Now I got it. Okay.
It's almost overnight.
I got it. I want to ask you about the fight between Bill Shorten and the states at the moment. The states have obviously been told through their bureaucracy that they're about to have to commit a lot more money to get the NDIS right. What are your thoughts about the state of the NDIS? It was ill-conceived at the start in many ways because, you know, we could have had a part payment, not a full payment, couldn't we?
Well, look, I'm not an economist, but all I can tell you is, look, there's good and bad. I see, for example, an awful lot of service providers, including registered service providers, being rorted by the NDIA, not getting paid what they're actually owed legitimately.
It works the other way too.
Oh, it does. It absolutely works the other way. I mean, I can tell you service providers, legitimate, honest, decent, hardworking service providers not getting paid, you know, $15,000, $50,000, $120,000, right? That's owing. I mean, I'm owed over $11,000 last count for agency managed work that I did. They're not going to cough up. I've lost that money. I could whistle.
However, most of the money is being lost on the other side of the ledger.
I think money's being lost left, right and centre. Who knows where all of these black holes are? I think there might be more than one.
But for instance, part of the problem is the fact that there's no system that stops someone quoting on work or equipment or care that may have cost one quarter of that previously.
Well, okay. I mean, there are lots of examples of that. For example, I remember being involved in an AAT, Administrative Appeals Tribunal matter, where the piece of equipment that my client needed was about $7,000, very roughly, $7,000. Yep. He was at the AAT for 2 years, and in the 2 years that they were at the AAT, the piece of equipment that they were willing to fund, which was $6,000, oh, so the difference of $1,000 was really worth, you know, a gazillion dollars in legal fees, but never mind. There was a $1,000 difference between the one that we needed for the gentleman, and we explained in great detail with an occupational therapy report as to why that piece of equipment was superior than the $6,000 piece of equipment. In the 2 years it sat at the AAT, argy-bargy back and forth, the $6,000 piece of equipment became defunct, so they had to cough up the seven.
Right.
Right? Yeah. I mean, this is how stupid the system is. Now I'm at the AAT with the case that I cited to you before,
yeah,
where I locked horns with the planner and then she took out a vendetta against my clients with the SACAT. But we're taking that one to the AAT as well. Sorry, I beg your pardon, in a slightly different case. But anyway, we're taking a matter to the AAT purely because they have now made what used to always be a plan-managed plan to agency managed so that they can control exactly what happens, what services are rendered. And I'm telling you, they're going to cost this client and his budget a lot more than what we can do on the cheap. We can do an awful lot of things on the cheap to stretch his budget because he's got a minuscule budget compared to what he needs.
Yeah.
Right? He probably has maybe about half of what he really needs.
Yeah.
But we could do a lot, lot better and a lot more on what they've provided. And the only difference is now we're fighting it out with the cost of tens, who knows how many tens of thousands of dollars to the taxpayer purely because they want to manage all the money and they won't allow the plan manager to do it.
Yeah, right. It's a mess. It sounds like a mess. It's a better system than what it was before though, huh?
Well, yes, I'm inclined to agree it is better. I'm inclined to agree it is better, but, you know, gee, that's a sliding scale too. You know, there are a lot of problems. There are a lot of problems.
Matilda, terrific to have you on the program. Thank you for going through that incredible case. I want to go back to that case just with one question. Is there any hope for this poor family? When I say family, these couple?
They know that most people don't have $20,000 to $50,000 to lay on the table to go and fight it in the Supreme Court. If we could get this into the Supreme Court, if there was a lawyer that would be willing to take it up pro bono, yeah, I reckon we'd win hands down.
Right.
I reckon we would win it hands down.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a case of catch me if you can.
Yeah, that's true. Mm. Matilda Borden, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Take care.
Much appreciated. Thank you very much for that. The founding member of the Community Linkages Inclusion and Innovation Centre, a forensic social worker, a former National Secretary of Whistleblowers Australia. Terrible, terrible. Too easy manipulated. The system is too easily manipulated and something's got to change. We've got to, you know, support people like Matilda who are prepared to highlight these, you know, inequities that exist in that kind of guardianship system. We've got to highlight it. I know it's a difficult area to highlight because you can't mention names and you don't, you know, that prevents you telling the story, but we've got to do all we can to get the word out. Thank you so much to Matilda for coming on today. Got to take a break. I'm a bit over time. We'll come back and take your calls if you do want to have your say. There's plenty to talk about today. From the United States or Canada, 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, 033-0024-1026. From Australia and New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. We might check in with Sonia Poulton before her program. What do you think? We'll do that right after the break on TNT.
I'm Naheem Hines, professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care, and they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. AMDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, AMDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And AMDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to AMDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
I want to eat apples and bananas. I need to eat apples and bananas. Why can't I eat apples and bananas?
Support the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks to help provide meals to those in need. Join us at feedingamerica.org.
Thanks for listening and being a part of the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yeah, I've been telling you last week about what the Labor government is doing in reference to the religious discrimination reforms. And I was sort of mounting the argument that they should not touch anything. That, you know, if something is not broken, don't fix it. There are not cases coming before any kind of tribunal or any courtroom of LGBT people saying, oh, I haven't been allowed to work at this particular Catholic school or this particular Muslim school because they don't want people like me. That's not the case. This is all about aggressive activism by the same people that we talk about quite often, which are transgender activists. This doesn't need fixing. We don't need to take a two-part religious discrimination policy and turn it upside down. We don't need to make it more difficult for religious schools to hire people. We don't need to put barriers in front of them. As a matter of fact, if you're talking about gay people, I've had teachers who are gay that have worked in Catholic schools. They get employed all the time. This is not a problem for them to find work in the Catholic system. That's the system that I know of. And to suggest that somehow there are kids that aren't accepted because they're gay or they're lesbian, that's not the case. And for any of you who've gone to any religious school, you'll know that that's not the case. And yet somehow we've got to address this. Scott Morrison gave up on it. And Anthony Albanese is trying to get to the bottom of it. This is the latest report from the Australian newspaper. I don't know what you make of this, but I just wish they'd drop off. Anthony Albanese has changed his position. That tells me they didn't have any position to start with. They didn't go into this particular issue with an answer or a solution. If they needed an answer or solution, they just tried to placate people who were aggravated about it, which were the transgender activists. Anthony Albanese has changed his position on the passage of religious discrimination reforms and is now leaving open the option of negotiating an outcome with the Greens instead of the Coalition if the minor party supports the rights of people of faith to practice their religion. So there you go. We're going to put it in the hands of the Greens in the Parliament. Anything in the hands of the Greens is something that will turn out to be a mushed up big fat meat pie. Anyway, as I said, after my little turn here on air, Sonia Poulton will take you through, and she is, of course, based in the UK. I watch all of our chatterers on the chat box speak to her prior to getting on air. She's on air in around about 5 minutes' time. I've got her on air right now. What are you up to during your show, Sonia?
I didn't realise I was on air. I'm sat here doing my makeup. Good morning to you.
Beautiful. Gotcha.
I'm great, thank you, Chris. Do you know, I did wonder why I could suddenly see myself in the little box in the corner of my screen, but I thought, hey, this is technology. Hello, everybody. You just had a glimpse into my pre-show preparation. I'm good. They're laughing in the chat.
We want to see the inside. You see, this is what it's all about. It's really a radio program, and now we're showing people the inside configurations of it all, including putting your makeup on.
Absolutely, and why not indeed? The great thing, of course, about today's News Talk is we're real, right, Chris? We're authentic.
Correct.
We're honest.
Right. And what are you covering today in your program?
Oh my gosh, so much. We're going to be covering the Westminster Farmers Protest. It's really interesting. I was just listening to your show about the absolute negligence always of mainstream media and the complicity. Well, of course, this is a huge protest that's taking place at the seat of Parliament, and mainstream media in the UK haven't even covered it. Oh. How can this even be possible? It's just astonishing, which is exactly why we need today's news talk, exactly for these moments, right, Chris?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, this is what happened through Europe when the farmers protested about various net zero policies. But because the media don't want to criticize anything to do with climate change or all the efforts to save the planet, which, of course, you can't do, you know, they didn't cover it until it just got so massive it shut down entire cities and they were doing basically major traffic reports. But I tell you what, the public are waking up to mainstream media, Sonia. Get with the program and cover the things that we want to see and hear.
Absolutely. And that is the way forward. I was so sick. Chris, like you, I have experience in legacy media. I know how it functions. I'm looking for a whole new media, and I believe that is exactly what we are creating right here on Good. TNT.
Right.
Thank you for that brief introduction on your show, by the way, Chris. Let people see the real side of us, eh?
Yeah. That's good. We'll be listening. Thank you so much for your time.
Take care. Thank you so much.
Sonia,
have a good day.
Good on you. Following the news, of course, Sonia will take you through. I've got to get out of here. Thank you for your company today. Some very heady topics. Sometimes they get heady because we've got a responsibility to cover them as well, which we did with Matilda, which was good. Let's come back and do it again tomorrow at the same time, eh? Let's do that. Tell your friends, tell your family. This is Chris Smith on TNT.